Three. Just click the button once.
Hi, this is Michael Dinnerty.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Rhonda Capron from Embry-Riddle.
This is Joyce Mullen from RRS.
All right, we're going to call to order the Complaint Committee of the Arizona State Board of High School Secondary Education. The Complaint Committee, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may go into executive session for obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431-03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The Board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items except for hearings. First, a roll call of members.
Michael Romano, Board Committee.
Anyone on the phone? Dr. Lack?
Dr. Jennifer Lack, board member.
All right, and your son?
Yes, Sam?
Just verifying. And Terry Stanford, technical director.
This is Attorney Frankie Schoenheimer, attorney for the board.
Kevin Lawton, board staff.
Rachel Kears, administrative assistant.
Great, welcome. The complaint committee minutes from the last meeting of September 27, 2008. Ms. Stanford, can you confirm they posted?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. I was not present at that meeting. Would someone like to make a motion to accept the minutes?
Well, neither was Dr. Leff. So
a motion to accept the minutes.
Can
we don't really have a.
They're
out there anyway.
Right. Well, the minutes are out there, but we will not vote to accept them. Do the three more there. All right. We have a
vote of one. Mike was here.
Craig.
I don't remember.
When did we have one here?
I thought we did.
I'd have to.
Is Craig still on the full board?
We'll find out.
Shortly. We can move it to the full board agenda to see if we have any members.
Do you have any questions for that? Yeah. All right. All right. First, we have a non-student complaint for the recording radio film connection.
Great. Madam Chair and members of the board, complaint number 19NS001, recording radio and film connection, and their license number is V1546. During the meeting on September 27th of 2018, the complaint committee reviewed the complaint, which was listed some of the following concerns. The use of the word apprentice, who would you rather learn from, a professional in music business or some instructor at a trade school, and unlimited tutoring. After discussion and review of the material, the complaint committee requested that RRFC to review its website, national content, and Arizona content, and submit any and all changes to include the removal of the use free and unlimited on the Arizona-specific website. The committee did not cite any violations or state statute of board rules. One issue that I do want to provide as an update, as a review of their website that I conducted earlier today, I noticed that there is no content related to the state of Arizona at all on their website. There's, they do continue to have on their front page, find an extra location near me. When you go in and you look for anything that is related to the state of Arizona on any of their four brands that they have on their website, the state is not listed. So I'm unable to go back and determine as of today if the content has changed. So, Madam Chair, the individual responsible for recording radio film connection is Joyce Mullen, and she's on the phone.
Ms. Mullen, you're on the phone?
She wasn't in the phone.
Yes, I am.
Okay. So.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Blanchard. I'm sorry.
Sorry, you cut out. So you'll explain to us how we can access the Arizona information?
Absolutely. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity for us to come back and be able to follow up with the submission since the September 28, 2018 meeting. On October 29, 2018, RFC presented updated marketing advertisements as presented on the school's website. Within that following submission, we had updated the responses based on the recommendations that came out of the September 28th committee meeting to ensure that we didn't have any information that was material question in that prior meeting. We designed two new websites. Website information was provided in the response. They're both specific to Arizona. And if you go to the Google search and you type in Arizona recording connection, you will have a web page that populates that provides specific information specific to Arizona, and that's where you can confirm that all the recommendations and suggestions from the prior meeting have been implemented. The recommendations of taking certain language off have been removed, and that language has been revised. I asked Mr. Dennerstein to come on the call with me today. He is our program developer for the website, and he can explain a little more so the tools that have been developed, and if you have specific questions about getting to the Arizona website, he can provide you with the URL information. So, Michael, can you provide a little insight there?
Sure. So the new websites are for recording and film that have the heaviest Arizona content. And the domains are, if you go to az.recordingconnection.com or az.filmconnection.com, essentially these websites are specific to Arizona. They don't contain any of the additional information, you know, on the main website. Relying on Google searches for people to find it.
Are you in front of a computer right now? Okay, so it says, we apologize for the inconvenience. The page you're attempting to reach does not exist. I have it as az.recordingconnection.com/state_Arizona. Am I in the wrong place? Mm-hmm.
It's not, none of it's coming up.
That should be it. One second. Can you try to refresh and see if it brings you to the where it's supposed to go?
Should be az.recordingconnection.com.
Az.recordingconnection.com. Yes, go ahead.
I do have it up.
Okay, so when I hit the Arizona, so it comes up, the first page comes up and says that it's not there, but then if you hit the Arizona external location, it does come up. So it looks like it was broken, but, well, actually technically it is broken, but you can still get there.
Okay, that initial link, yeah, it should redirect it. If you try that initial link again, it should bring you to the home page. I'm not sure what happened. But this is since you're there now, this is the Arizona specific website where, you know, all the language can be reviewed and everything.
Okay. And we had been provided screen print, so we reviewed that, but when we just tried to look at it live, we couldn't get there. But it was because the link appeared to be broken, but we're there now, so that's great. Okay. So you don't plan to have on your regular main page, you're not going to have any kind of a link to bring you to Arizona. They'll specifically be going to this separate web page. Is that how your advertising will appear in Arizona?
I'm not certain yet. That we're still discussing that aspect of it, how we're going to get visitors here, whether if there's a link, you know, to the Arizona locations from the locations page on the main recording and film site that would bring them to the Arizona specific page, or if we're going to rely strictly on Google searches to get them here. That decision is still being processed.
You know, the one thing that we would ensure the committee that the text and the presentation of information that's currently on this Arizona webpage would remain exactly the same. So it would not be commingled with anything. If you look at the RRF page, say for California, it will not be commingled with that language. It would be directed back to Arizona and stay specific with the changes that we've made to satisfy Arizona.
Okay.
How would a student, I guess, not get confused if they were to go to your one location and start looking at information? I realize you don't have the Arizona site on there. I'm just trying to, from a consumer perspective of a student potentially having interest, how they would know, oh, I can't go to their main website. I've got to go and search specifically for Arizona. How do you anticipate dealing with that?
I think Michael can answer that because residents in Arizona would be targeted just to the Arizona site. So, Michael, can you answer that, please?
Yeah, if they're coming from a Google search and they're searching from the state of Arizona or they're searching for something in the state of Arizona, they should land on the Arizona page. But if they happen to land on the main website, I guess from a marketing standpoint, how do they know whether or how do they find Arizona from there? I think they would potentially visit the locations page and then see that it's not on the list and possibly use a contact form or call just to confirm, like, do you guys have any opportunities in Arizona at that point? Once it's added back to the list, if we go that route, they would select Arizona from the drop-down, and that would then bring them to the Arizona-specific website from there.
Okay, maybe you can do that.
And the decision on how we're going to
change, okay.
Please.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Oh, she's sorry,
I think that's the decision on how we're going to relink it. The decision on how we're going to relink it from back to the site is on the table, and we should have an answer to that really in the next I'm thinking day or couple of days. If we want to make sure when we relink it, we're not going to have any of these same issues and that Arizona will stay as Arizona currently presented.
So I would just say, I know we've been at this since really June, with various concerns we've expressed around how you're presenting certain information to the consumers. And I know you addressed the ones from originally in the June timeframe, and then we were back around it in the September timeframe with some additional concerns. All of this is from the perspective of trying to help the consumer be able to understand what they're getting into and your obligation to do that piece of it. And that's really the spirit of where we're coming from. I would say I'm concerned for you as well. If a student were to bring forward a complaint and part of that was information they took off of your current site, which excludes Arizona but doesn't really call out the exclusion of Arizona that I can see, it's reasonable to believe that a consumer would connect what you have on your main site as what the expectations are of the products that you're offering, unless you can do something different. So I see that you're trying to meet the obligation, which is great, so thank you for that. I'm just trying to be reasonable so you can appreciate our perspective and where our focus is coming from, that it's very consumer-oriented, and it's reasonable to believe that a consumer could still go to these pages, not realizing that this isn't representative of how you operate in Arizona, and they could make decisions based off of that.
And also the VIMEO site, when I put in, you said just Google Arizona with the name of your school, so I put in Arizona Recording Radio Film Connection. And there were a couple of things there. The first one that looked like it was you was actually this Vimeo, and it has that it's Phoenix, and it's not Phoenix, and it says apprenticeship inside a Phoenix recording studio. So I know you can't control all things that are out there, but is that a company that you use for advertising?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Because there is a link, when I click on the link, it does bring me to Arizona X-Ren location, so it seemed like it was, you know, a lead generator for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to research that and provide the committee with additional response.
I'm just going to show
my apologies. My computer just went down, and I'm rebooting right now. So,
So I just typed into Google Arizona.
I'm sorry.
We're just showing everybody
this one. Vimeo. Vimeo is a. It's like
so
YouTube.
It's like a YouTube. So
yeah,
YouTube.
They can have that actually.
Yeah,
so
they can. Post.
They use it.
They have to. They usually have to.
Yeah.
Because they're a pro user, so they do have an account with Vimeo.
Okay.
So our experts here are saying, based on this Vimeo page, because it says recording radio film connection and it says pro, that would mean that you do have some level of ownership of this, what is listed here. And it does so say apprentice inside Phoenix recording studio, and it does have a link that goes directly. It does say school location is Phoenix, but when I click on it, it brings me to Tucson. So I don't. Phoenix and Tucson are sufficiently far apart that I don't think you should be, first of all, using Phoenix when it's really Tucson. And also, it has the language that we've asked you to remove. Some language we've asked you to remove. So I feel like we're still not where we need to be. I've been very excited at your response and pleased that you addressed everything. And the screenshots that were provided did show that you had. But then going live, we're, you know, kind of circled back to still not where we need to be. Do you have
any other comments?
No, I think.
Is this the Vimeo video? Is that what you're?
Yeah,
it's through the Vimeo site.
Which link are you finding?
It says
vimeo.com.
.com, and then it has 88526786 up in the browser. I just typed in an Arizona recording radio film connection, and this is.
Okay, I got it. Yeah.
And it says the Phoenix, Arizona recording connection. And then it has a link to school location, Phoenix, and then it brings you to Tucson.
Got it. I see it here. Right. Okay.
So, again, I think what we're recognizing is consistent since June, since issues have been brought forward, is you're struggling with the control of your communication and information on the internet to consumers. I think it's maybe it's not drastic, but to create an entirely new site to try and just address the Arizona concerns, because from last time it seemed as though it would be very challenging for you to control the content across. I might be misunderstanding that, but it does bring pause to the group, I would imagine, around ultimately, are Arizona students looking at the appropriate information, represented in the appropriate way, that they can make appropriate decisions with, trying to avoid a complaint coming forward and what that looks like, so that we can just be as forthright as possible. So that concerns me. Are you having issues with your ability to control the content and make changes?
You know, we continue monitoring the site every single day. We're, you know, licensed in a different state. We have continually developing policies and procedures. DT, or Michael and I, have developed process. No new language can get on the website without it coming to compliance, without him controlling it, because he's the only one that can post. We have on our agenda to basically tear down all of the old website and start a complete rebuilding process. But our first priority was to satisfy Arizona, because this is the one state that we seem to have had a number of issues regarding our marketing and advertising website. So, you know, that's the reason we took, you know, the resources and spent hours of time developing the specific website to ensure the committee and the staff that, you know, we're really dedicated to do this the right way and to get a language there that you feel is most appropriate.
I understand that we have been a challenge for you, and you have equally been a challenge for us. We're just trying to protect the consumers, and we just keep going in circles. And like this Vimeo, you know, says 5 years ago is where it's listed, which I assume that's when it's created. I hit the about, or there's a more, and it brings us to about, and it talks about it as a Phoenix, Arizona recording connection. It doesn't have the address listed about Tucson, but it says it was last updated in March of 2014. So it seems that here is a site that is probably getting leads since it has. You know, it brings me to the Tucson location, so you had to have done an update because you didn't have Tucson in 2014. So I don't quite understand how it is that these links are working and how we can protect our consumers when we can't get to it without a great deal of difficulty. I mean, you don't have a school in Phoenix. You're not licensed for a school in Phoenix, and that's what this says. It's a Phoenix, Arizona recording, and then it goes to Tucson. And I know that, you know, the... You know, a large city, they might say it's New York, it's outside New York or something, but I mean, Tucson is very far away from Phoenix. And you can't say it's a Phoenix school when it's in Tucson. It's not like it's, you know, Mesa or Tempe that's, you know, right in the valley. It's quite a ways away. Any suggestions?
Understood. I can update this description today, the link to the correct Arizona website, and adjust the verbiage so that it fits what it's supposed to be on this Vimeo page. This one obviously didn't get caught.
And that just leads us to how many others. I mean, because you said, oh, just put in the Google and you'll get right to the Tucson studio. And I actually had to, you know, go a couple of steps to get there, which would just lose you leads, I imagine. But then what I did find, you know, says Phoenix instead. So if I keep Googling, am I going to find all sorts of other stuff?
In good faith, you have been making adjustments. You have invested to try and make corrections and stand up this additional site. It does seem reasonable to come forward at the next committee meeting with your plan of how you're going to put this in front of Arizona consumers. And maybe at that point in time, you can bring us up to speed on any other changes at that point. Again, all of this is with the intent to protect our consumers within Arizona, but also to protect you as well. If we can give you guidance to on adjustments that you can make, it's the best of both worlds. So that would be my recommendation. And I don't know if I necessarily need to make a motion for that to invite them back to our next complaint committee for an update.
Postpone action and table it till next direction, which you somewhat did, so.
Okay, so when's the next complaint meeting?
March, and it'll be the fourth Thursday in March.
That's the next complaint meeting?
Complaint.
So do you want them to come to the full board, or just let them come in March?
March.
Okay, so your assignment, should you just accept it, is to come to the next complaint meeting, which will be in March of 18. 19. Yeah, we went backwards. And at that point, I trust that we won't have any difficulty being able to follow the path and ensure that it is correctly listing only Tucson and all the things that you've already have fixed remain fixed. So will we see you in March?
Okay, thank you very much. We welcome the opportunity to come back.
Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is another non-student complaint.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you. For WASU.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, complaint number 19 NS003, WASU. Vocational license number is V1650. State Board has received or have received a number of calls from both local and national media regarding concerns that they were hearing about their programs, recruiting practices, and a number of other areas. In his letter to WASI, the State Board noted errors in the course curriculum, out-of-date lectures, unqualified mentors, discrepancy with tuition and fees, enrollment and recruiting practices that did not meet State Board requirements. WASU offers three programs that are approved by the State Board. They include cybersecurity, data science, and full-stack web development and JavaScript. There are a number of folks, but I'm not exactly sure everyone that's on the phone, so for those individuals from WASU, could you please identify yourself?
This is Jacob Mayhew.
And
Jennifer's
on as well. Great. Any others? Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair.
All right. Would one of you like to give us a brief explanation of what's going on?
We submitted an interview. You wanted to give a summary of the information we submitted back to you guys in reference to your letter. We're not quite sure exactly. I mean, we have the five different markers on the complaint. Do you want us to write out each of those markers?
Well, if it's beneficial, we can jump into questions if that works, Madam Chair. First off, thank you very much for your response. It was very helpful going through it. I just have a couple questions related to some of the information that was provided. It was a little hard for me to see, so this may have been included in some of the screenshots that we had, particularly in regards to the concerns brought forward of lectures being out of date that were recorded. I was just trying to get a sense. The way I took the explanation was you continue to keep older recordings available. They might become outdated or superseded by newer recordings. I didn't know how you differentiated those recordings, though. Are they dated for your students so that they would understand they're looking at something older or newer? I couldn't quite tell that.
Yes, that's a great question. So we store all videos that happen. So there are two types of lectures. Number one, there's a live lecture that's happening twice a week in every class from a current instructor. We call them workshops, some people call them lectures, where they do that. Every live lecture is recorded and stored in a database, and it is stored by date. There is a search feature where you can go in, and if you want to search on the loop, it's going to come up and provide you the different lectures that are related to that. And so there, as by date, there are dates that are on there that it will show in the date order. Now, the students may change the order that they show. But, yeah, so they'll be able to see old and new versus what they have. And so there are old lectures in there that could have been done a year ago by an instructor we had that is sitting in that archive database that the students have access to. But they do get live lectures every week for their current class, and then they have access to our archived that are stored by date.
But it does sound like the student can see the date of the recording to determine on some level or another if it's older or newer information.
Correct.
Okay. Just trying to go through some of your retention rates and then the placement information that you provided as well. Obviously, your data science and your cybersecurity retention rates are really, really low. I was just wondering why that might be and what action you're taking around that, if any.
Great question. So data science and cybersecurity just recently started. I'll take cybersecurity. When we first started up cybersecurity, the initial couple classes were more difficult than we had anticipated for our students that were coming in. So what we have done is we have created two additional prep classes the students receive now which are basically a prep class in A plus and a prep class in .NET that they have to complete before they come into the program now. And so when we first originally did it, we were doing it based on the student providing like a job resume saying that they had experience in the computers. And you are correct, when they first came in, it was much more difficult for them and they were dropping out in like our second and third class in or term and they were dropping. And so we have mitigated it with adding in those additional prep classes beforehand to make sure that they really have the knowledge that they need to have in them. And then similar to data science, we adjusted our entry, we do an assessment of our entry assessment. So we adjusted those. And then on the data science one, the first course, we've put what we call a call to start. So the first 21 days at the end of the course now, we set down as an education team, they review the student's progress in the class and their grade. And then if the student is not passing the class, then we reverse them out of the program, 100% refund. They have the ability to redo one more time if they do choose to come back into the program. And so we've also added that in at the end of the first, we call them mods, but it's the end of the first class that we have to make sure that the students have the ability to succeed in those tougher programs as they're going through them.
Thank you for that. When do you anticipate having your first graduating class out of those two programs?
I think data science, I think it might be this month of data science. Yeah, I can look real quick, but I think we have our first graduate slated to come out this month. The programs are very small. We haven't grown those programs very big, so I will look and see when our first graduate comes out as we're talking.
I would assume it's some type of cohort. I don't know if that's a small number or like 10 or 30, or would you have any perspective on that?
No, the entire, yeah, give me a second, I'll tell you how. We have a very, very small data science cohort in the program. So we have a cohort, yeah, 12-9 is our first student that's graduating. And then we have two students graduating on 12-9. And then our next class after that is the January 15th, and we have four students in that one. So when we first started the program, we start with just a couple students, and then we added four. So we do have those students that are graduating. And then after that, the next one would be in March.
Well, you certainly did address all of the questions that we asked for you to. I don't have any other questions at this time.
Dr. Leck, to you.
I did. I had a question on the placement rate. So I understand, or at least I believe I understand, that the placement rate for the full stack web developer is 80%, and then you found 80% people are employed in an occupation for that, correct?
Correct. So we count as in field. We use the SIP stock code that the Department of Ed has.
Okay.
And so we count placement only if they fall within the SIP stock code in relation to the job. So when we say we have X placement number, that is people that are working inside that SIP stock code that we have. And then we also have a third party company that verifies 25% of our placements. So we do placements where the students fill out a form saying, you know, here's my entry pay, here's what I do, did it. And then we have a third-party company we pay that verifies about, they're supposed to verify 25%, so they're somewhere in there based on when they're doing their verification cycles that they have, so.
Okay, so my question is, there's another set of data that was submitted, and it says placement data for students, student contact and employment, student salary, employer contact and persistence. And then it has also 80% for full stack web developer. Does that mean that 80% of the people that graduated, you got that all of that information from, student contact and employment, student salary, et cetera?
So anybody we place, part of our placement requirement when we place is that our career service team complete a placement form, which has company contact information, entry salary, first date of employment, and we try to get that on 100% of the students that are placed, because we have a career service team that's also sourcing job orders and everything for them. The large number of those placements are actually controlled by us because we're the ones finding the jobs and helping them get into them. But yeah, so of the ones who graduated, 80% of them are placed in field by SIPSDOC, and we have the verification.
So wouldn't those percentages always be a match then?
Depends on when they ran the report. Aren't they matched? I thought they were both 80%.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're both 80%, so they're driven from the same data, right? So they're always going to be the same. So next time you have graduates, it might be 95% per se. The other one would also be 95%?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That was my question.
Okay. And I don't have any questions either. I thought that your report was very thorough. You took each of the items and addressed them. I appreciate that.
Do we need a motion?
No problem. We appreciate the opportunity to address them.
So I'd like to make a motion of no findings and that we dismiss this.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? I'll second.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor by roll call?
Michael Romano, aye.
Dr. Leck?
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
Tristan,
aye.
All right, thank you very much for calling in today and giving us the information.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for the time. Have a great day.
You too.
So the next section is student complaints, and we can get very long and emotional, so I would love to mention that we have read all of the information that was presented. So when we asked both the students and the school to give a summary of the complaint, if they would limit their comments to no more than 15 minutes, and then we will ask questions. So the first complaint is Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University.
Before we start, for Embry-Riddle, we do not utilize the student's name, so we'll be referring to them, and we would appreciate it if you would refer to the student as CT and do not use their full name. Thank you. Madam Chair and the members of the Complaint Committee, complaint number 19S002, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. Degree license number is D1084 and D1084. Hey, look at that, same one. So on June 14th, the State Board received a complaint from CT against Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University alleging the following: cafeteria food that included possible violations from the Yavapai County Health Department. Embry-Riddle required CT to purchase where there was already coverage, a health insurance policy where there was already coverage. And number three, failure in financial aid department to contact CT prior to May 1st and losing out on his housing deposit. After review of the complaint, we've been unable to make contact with CT. Now, I do want to ask, CT, are you on the phone?
Or in the audience?
Or in the audience. Okay. We've made multiple contacts to try to find the complaint, and they've been unsuccessful to this point. Embry-Riddle submitted the attached response, which included CT's communication of the issues. It appears to be a grievance procedure was completed pursuant to Rule R439-403. Madam Chair.
So who is here on the phone or in person to represent the school?
Yes, this is Dr. Rhonda Capron. I am Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. Joining me on the phone is David Hall, our Chief Business Officer, and Larry Sesson, our Dean of Students.
Okay. Would you like to give a brief explanation? Keep in mind that we did read what you submitted.
Yes, ma'am. We appreciate the opportunity. We have included copies of communication with the student and with the student's parents to address the issue that was raised that we were not, he did not get responses from his concerns. We have included all the additional requests for information from the Yavapai County Health Department, and two additional policies that were requested as part of your letter to us.
Board members, do you have any questions?
Just a couple here. I was trying to appreciate, and I apologize, it's probably just I wasn't following it properly, but maybe if you could explain to me the purchasing of the health insurance. It sounded like CT had insurance through you. Maybe you discontinued carrying that provider, and then he was obligated to purchase a different plan. I wasn't quite able to follow that.
This is Larry Stubbin, the Dean of Students. Basically what happened was we have one insurance provider, United Health, that has remained the same. His freshman year, students opt out, and he opted out of his freshman year. That went through. What we found that year, ironically, that we found other students from Southern California that had Kaiser insurance, it did not cover them in the state of Arizona unless it was a life-threatening or emergency situation. So we felt that note that did not meet our minimum requirement for comparable insurance. So when it came to CT's sophomore year, we were doing a more extensive background check, and those from Southern California with Kaiser insurance, we let them know that that did not meet, it was not comparable insurance. And so he was charged that year. That's why he was not charged his freshman year, but was charged his sophomore year.
Thank you for that. And that's a requirement through the school to manage that health insurance?
Correct. All students must have a minimum health insurance, and it's got to be comparable to what United Health Service provides.
All right. I just wanted to verify. I know that the most recent health service reports showed a clean bill of health, although it did seem as though there seemed to be a little bit of a history with violations that were identified. Is that accurate?
Yes, this is David Hall, Chief Officer. That's correct.
And to your knowledge, you've had no other student health concerns brought forward?
That's correct.
That's all the questions I have in the response.
Yeah, and just since this is a recording and people don't see everything we have here, I do see that although the student had a complaint, he didn't go to the school or to the venue to complain. He sent out emails fairly widespread to other students. You investigated, found other minor issues, no one else got sick, and then he continued to eat there after the complaint. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I just think for the recording, just take them and listen, and they're worried about eating at your school after you guys throw that in there. I was very paranoid about food poisoning personally. In my opinion, you answered this very well. It looks like the issue with the timing on the $300 housing deposit, that is financial aid, I guess a little bit late in processing, whether that was his fault or the school's, but you refunded him all the money except for the $50 replacement key, and that seems fair. And since the student isn't here, I'm satisfied. Dr. Leff, do you have anything else?
No, I do not.
Okay. Then I would like to make a motion.
Hello?
We got you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
You can hear me?
We can.
Okay.
So I make the motion to dismiss the complaint. Do I have a second?
A second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other comments? All right. Well, thank you very much for your very thorough call for that. Thorough roll call. I was just wanting to move along here.
So, Mike Romano, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Black, aye.
All right. Thank you. And the complaint. It's hard to be on the phone. So the complaint is dismissed. Thank you very much for providing us with the information. And hopefully, we won't see you for the complaint committee again.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know we went that I was on the phone at the last meeting.
Oh, okay. You were working.
Yeah. So it was surprising how hard it was.
We could do the math.
And then the...
Yeah, there's a little bit of a...
Madam Chair?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delay. It,
okay, thank you. Could that be...
She's not hearing me talk.
Oh, shut up. All right.
I had mine muted, Jennifer, so you weren't hearing my...
All right. The
no, I it makes me laugh because I'm quiet.
Tell you what, I will expressly call you out and ask you to make comments so you know you have the floor. How's that?
No, that's fine. I'm trying to second, and then it's just making me laugh because every time I second, you don't hear me. I'm giving up.
Okay. The next student complaint is A.T. Still University, Arizona School of Dentistry and Oral Health, complaint K.O.
Great. Again, to the school, not utilizing the student's name, but K.O. decided to represent that information. Madam Chair, members of the committee, complaint number 19S003, A.T. Still University of Health Sciences, DBA, Arizona School of Dentistry, license number D1226. Complaint summary, I know that you have read the report, but back on August 10th, the State Board received a complaint from KL against AT Still University. KL stated that he was given a number of individual education plans, or an IEP, for which stated were not justified. He also reviewed a number of professionals and warnings. KL states that there are no academic criteria for these warnings and no policy in the catalog. To support the allegations in his complaint, he stated that during a meeting on July 17, 2017, with Dr. Wolf, KL was told he successfully completed his second year and would be promoted to his third year. However, the IEP was extended through December of 2017, which KL stated was against the ATSU policy. KL stated a student cannot be on an IEP and gain advancement to the next program year. And then you will notice the 12th, KL received a letter notifying that he would be expelled for the following reasons: unable to take constructive criticism in a professional manner, unable to develop consistently demonstrate accurate self-assessment skills, and inability to comply with the terms of his IEP. In terms of the note, it says most of the history in this complaint and response are pertaining to academics. Both Mr. Blanchard and I have communicated to KL that the board's responsibility is not to determine academic but policy issues. So he's very aware of that before he provides his information.
Okay.
So stating that, the complainant is here in person. So KL?
Can I come forward?
Yes, please come forward.
And when you introduce yourself, just do it with your initials, because your identity is kept private.
I am K.O., and I'm representing myself in this complaint against a distill. I am dismissed on purely subjective reasons, and I would like to move forward with my life and have the dismissal removed from my transcript so I can go and finish my education.
So, have you been told by another school that your status of how you exited at AT Still University is preventing you from being accepted?
I haven't had that answer yet, but unofficially I know that that status is preventing me from moving forward. So
and how do you unofficially know that?
By talking to people.
What kind of people?
Related to the academic area.
So you have spoken to people at schools you would like to apply to,
and they have told you that the status on your transcript would prevent you from being accepted.
You know what it is.
That's sort of vague and subjective, so I'm trying to understand why. Because honestly, the school statuses that they list, there is no like countrywide definition of what schools use for drop, withdrawn, etc. Like, it's an individual school uses their terminology and then they explain it in their catalog. And I was just surprised to hear a complaint that you want to change what the school's policy, like their reason for dismissing you is based on their policies, and whatever code they're using for it is based on their policies. And it's just unusual to have someone come in and say the word they're using for their dismissal of me is preventing moving forward and going to the school, but you haven't tried. And I'm also not certain that it would be their responsibility to, you know, change their policies. So if they withdrew you based on their policies, which, you know, it does look like they did, I'm just trying to get my arms around how we as a board, that would fall under our purview to say, you need to change your policy to put a different word on his transcript, because if he proceeds, it might help him get into another school.
Okay, in the future, I can provide whatever documentation is needed between the new institution and the existing institution, and whatever the policy and criteria they have in place and they would need. As long as the AD skill would provide so I can move forward, that would be sufficient for me.
But you haven't yet gone to any other school, and no other school has said you can't apply.
I can, once I get to that point, I can provide exactly what they officially need for me to move forward.
Okay, so you filed a complaint with us saying that this school has essentially harmed you by following their policies. We looked at it, and it looks like their policies are compliant with our rules. So I'm just trying to get down to, you know, what we are allowed to do for you, and I'm just trying to understand it. So it sounds to me like your complaint isn't with their actual policies and their terminology. It's that you perceive this will prevent you from going somewhere else, but you haven't been turned down somewhere else.
Yes. I think that is something that I would definitely address based on what is, you know, what's going to happen. But the dismissal status that I went through, it was purely subjective. There was nothing objective why I was dismissed. We're talking the aftermath, what's going to happen after a certain point, but I was dismissed on purely subjective reasons. Even the policy, their own policy, did not make coherent sense. Sometimes it was this, and sometimes it was something else. So that's where my complaint is. Step two in my life would be, once this resolved and determined exactly how I was dismissed, I can provide official documentation what the new institution is going to require of me for AD skill to provide, so I can make this transition in the new institution. But my complaint is about the dismissal and how it was done and what I endured during all this time. It's pure cruelty.
Do you have questions?
So, in regards to the dismissal, it would appear as though you had been put on an individual education plan a few times, at least two, from what I saw in the information that was provided, that called out where deficiencies were at, and then clearly spelled out, I think it was four different routes that could result from your inability to follow through on that IEP. Is that accurate?
Based on the school's statement, yes, it was the April 2017 IEP. Then it was the July 13 meeting that I was introduced to the July-December IP. And then it was another 1 month extension from, we can say, end of December until end of January, February 1st, 2018. And then on February 12th, I was dismissed. So there were like a few, but as I stated in my documentation, there were, or to make it time efficient, I passed the July, the April, June 2017 IP, and I was told by Dr. Wolf in July 13 meeting that I successfully made it, but yet I remained on probation and IEP.
Well, probation and IEP are two separate things, no?
Correct. But you cannot be promoted to the next year if you're on probation.
And you got that in writing?
I sent a picture to Mr. Blanchard, and I have a picture in here, you know, from their own catalog.
Would you be able to reference that for us? I did look through, but I did not see where it specifically said you cannot be promoted through.
And
there's a policy in their specific policy on probation that it does not specifically state that part of it. And let me find it for you.
While we're looking for that piece of it, it would certainly appear as though the school is expressing to you concern in the progression through the program based on two different IEPs that essentially ranged close to 6 months.
The way it was is that every time I'll pass something, new allegations will come up. For example, on the July, December 2017, I was introduced with self-assessment. I was never found deficient in the press for self-assessment, so why is it a new condition that I need to pass? Or for example, last professionalism form I had, it was since February 2016, if my reflection is correct, and then not earning any more professionalism forms. This was added in the July, December 2017 IEP. So these artificial conditions were placed either for them to get more time so I can do something wrong, and they have no legitimacy for me to be dismissed, or until I fail. So new conditions, actually, in the middle of the meeting, in that after the progress IP that we had on November the 7th, 2017, a clarification where I refused to sign two forms, completely uncalled for. One was, it needed two check marks in there, academic, which my GPA at that point in time was above 3.0. And the second reason for that was conduct, behavior, professionalism. I haven't heard any professionalism forms until that point. So almost a year and three quarters after my last professionalism form. Yet, I was told by Dr. Walt to go ahead and sign it because Mr. Davalos had to give them information so I can move forward to the program. It was unbelievable. After that, I had an 11-17 clarification meeting with Dr. Walt and Dr. Cotton, where new allegations came in. Perfect example we're already talking about. Communication issues came up, which I have never heard before, and productivity issues. I was never told the word until that point in time. So new things keep being added until something works so I can fail. And this IP gets extended with conditions, new and old, put in there based on our criteria. It got extended. Now, there is a difference. In the July, December 2017 IP, there was not those two conditions, which was either repeating the D3 year or being dismissed. So I couldn't be dismissed at that point, at the end of December. Those conditions were added in the end of December through February 1st, 2018 IEP.
It seemed as though throughout this time as well, though not judging the grading policy, but just understanding kind of the track that got you here. There were some failures that took place in regards to tests or evaluations that were done from the information that was provided?
Correct. If we have to go back chronologically in time, I did fail to express in November 2016. I remediated successfully in early January. I think I have to give a date. So there were two exams, January 9th was one, and I took the other one for the other day. It was a standardized test, right? So the whole subject that was done, I was testing one test. I passed it successfully. My recollection is correct. I got a 70% on that. And then an oral exam was done with a doctor that was instructing that class. And I got 100% in that. So from that point on, until April 12, 2017, when I was put on the IEP, I did not have anything happen. Everything was good. I was passing. So this three and a half months that I was good, then I was put on IEP. And the reason for that is that I say that I failed the second exam of the treatment plan with a 65%. Now, that exam, to get to the detail, was not purely standardized. It was a good majority, not good majority, but I would say almost half and a half standardized and questions that were, you know, graded manually by the instructor. So I failed that with 65%, but on the first exam, on the same class, I got 87.5. I did end up passing the same class with a B. So another point that is very interesting at this time, in oral pathology, I failed one of the six exams in February. I was never told anything by administration or being called or being placed on anything. February down to end of March. Two different standards in the same exact time.
As part of your
being applied by administration.
As part of your IEP, it had you checking in, if you will, and there seemed to be some disconnects there. Can you walk me through that?
Yes, during the first one of the criteria, what I was asked, based on Dr. Wolf and the other members of the committee, is that I have to meet with the same members of the committee on a weekly basis. So I can progress, get leadership, get mentorship, get guidance, how to make it successfully. Only three times out of a calculation of 11 weeks until the end of June of 2017. I was met. And as proof I provided, you have the answers in there. I did ask every single week, when was the meeting for next week? When was the meeting for next week? When it was? And you have the answers through those emails there that either I am not here for one reason or another, out of the office, of the office. So 3 out of 11 times, I graduated myself. I was told on July 13, 2017 by Dr. Wald that I successfully made it to the first one. Now, based on my experience in other education institutions in the United States, if you successfully make it through a class or a process, there's no need for you to be on probation and a continuous IEP.
Well, you hang on a second. An IEP is always just for grades, so we do have to keep them separate. It seemed that the issues, at least as written in your dismissal letter, were not taking constructive criticism in a professional manner, developing and consistently demonstrating accurate self-assessment skills, and completing the terms of your IEP. So it seems like there were multiple steps, and we'll ask them to give further clarification on it. But I think that you're really focusing on it, that you've got decent grades, and there it appears you're focusing on that it's a bigger picture than just grades, is what it sounds like. And so I think that to understand why, with decent grades, you are dismissed, I think maybe we should listen to the school first and let you come back up after they answer our questions.
Thank you for bringing it up. Does the vague allegations that I've been we've been facing, or I've been facing for a very long time, that
well, I think that your acceptance of what they're asking of you, you think that it probably isn't important, it's vague. They feel that it's very important, it's their right to ask.
No, I don't mean that. I said that vague, that there is nothing specific of what I'm doing wrong, what the conversation is, who the individual was, and what it was done wrong. There's nothing like that. Like the same thing with communication issues. I did ask from that meeting, my attorney has asked for quite some time. Okay, date, name, conversation that happened. Just general stuff that doesn't tie to anything. And this is communication issues. I was never told until 11/17/2017 that I had communication issues. So it's 2 years. In the third year, I was never told anything such a thing. Productivity issue. I was in clinics in July, August, September, October, November. Nobody told me once that what I was lacking in, what I had to improve productivity-wise, and what needed to be. First time I heard of that, it was by Dr. Cotton on the 11/17 meeting.
So
I don't think it's a lot of other issues in there that I have made clear.
So a couple things. One, we know that education is progressive. So even though at the start of your program that may not have been identified as a concern or an issue, as the curriculum advances, as you're doing more practical demonstration of things, it's reasonable to see those types of things start to bubble to the surface a little bit more and breakdowns on that. So within reason here, you know, obviously there was dialogue that was going back and forth with regards to concerns that they were expressing to you over a period of time, albeit maybe they weren't identified right when you started school. I am trying to just get clarity. I'm not sure if you submitted this or if the school submitted it. In regards to the self-assessment, there was one where you had yourself rated and then the instructors had rated you. Have you seen that?
And what is exactly?
Was your self-assessment in various activities or part of the curriculum piece of where you would say you were proficient at it, you were extremely successful at it, counter the instructor would provide you with an assessment of where they thought you were at? Or have you seen that, or were those discussed with you at all?
Is it the self-evaluation form that was hand-sealed?
Yes.
That's what you're
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Before I get to that, I'm going to that productivity issue. On the 11/29 week in 2017 that I had with, can I mention the name of the doctor? Or?
If it's school personnel, you can.
Okay. With Dr. Khan and Dr. Thome, I asked Dr. Khan, I said, why wasn't I told about this in August, in September, in October, and I'm hearing this now. So why couldn't we check productivity on a monthly basis? And the answer I got back was that it's not good to look at it, you know, that often. It's like stock market, that if you look at it that often, it will just drive you crazy.
Well, there are learning curves, right? And some people who adapt to it early can start to progress faster through certain education, where others need a little more time to bake in it, if you will, and then all of a sudden they make up a lot of ground along the way in the later months in education. That's reasonable. So in this particular case, it would seem as though you had a slow start where the institution was evaluating that, and through that felt like you had time to make that up until it started to get to a point where you started to seem to fall significantly behind that of others based on the information that was provided here.
I was told that I failed comprehensive clinic care one. And that is by the end of whatever the school, the fall term ended, but it was December 21st or 27th, I'm not sure. So if that's what it was, that I had to make up for those numbers, then I don't think it's reasonable to say that in a matter of a month I should be getting an app and failing that class when I was not told by anyone, direct supervisors or anybody for that matter, that what needs to be done had to be being corrected.
So you're saying there wasn't some syllabus that explained to you what your requirements were for the class and that's why you need to do them?
No, what the specifics were for me not to fail, given that it was a concern for them. There's nothing in the syllabus for that class that says you have to meet these numbers or these specific procedures by the fall semester. The criteria states that it has to be fall until the end of that year, which is fall and spring. And there's nothing in there. That's, I'm talking facts, I'm talking specifics. That's exactly what it is. That you have to meet, you know, half of that number, or you have to meet this number, so you can be considered passing, or temporary passing, or however you want to talk about. So it's completely arbitrary, you know, for somebody to be placed on a failing grade without specific or guidance from the syllabus.
I'm sorry, but I guess from a common sense standpoint, if I'm told that over two terms I have to do 100 things, honestly, kind of common sense would tell me that I'm supposed to get about half of them done in the first term. So are you saying because they didn't specifically tell you that you have this many months to do these things, you felt that they should have held your hand and said, that means you need to proration and figure out how many you need to have? I'm trying to understand why in this level of education, honestly, why that level of hand-holding would be expected or required. Because this is a high-level program.
Correct.
And if you were in a practice, you're not going to have someone holding your hand saying, you know, don't walk away from a patient if they have to have five procedures. Don't tell them. I don't know. I'm just having trouble understanding what your complaint is and if your expectations were more than would be normal or usual for this level of education to tell you to do.
My point is this. So if that class specifically started in July or August, July, I think, 2017, and it ends until the end of May or June 2018, and the criteria says between that time, you have to do, let's say, 30 procedures, right? And I'm not being told until November that I'm having a productivity issue, none of that sort, from my immediate supervisors or by anybody else.
So
then I'm given 1 month between that date, approximately, until whenever the fall semester ended, to make some reasonable, not told the number in the syllabus what it has to be, then I'm asking why I have to be given an F grade for that class when I have time, I have another 6 months to meet and surpass those numbers.
So would you prefer that they wait until the 1st of May and say, wow, you've done 20%, so would that have been better for you, for them to not tell you that you were not doing, you know, a prorational number that seems reasonable to have done? I'm just sort of stuck on why it is that you're holding them accountable for, you know, you not getting a reasonable amount of work done, and why you would complain that they were telling you that you were far behind. And looking at the chart, it looked like everybody else kind of knew they were supposed to be doing that amount. So some amount, I think, was, you know, like an assumption that if you have this much work to do, you'd be trying to get probation done, not rush it all and do it at the end. So, again, at this level of education, I'm just surprised that you were surprised that they told you that you're not far enough along, given how much you've gotten done and how long you had to do it. Sorry. And keep in mind, I'm not an educator.
I concur.
Thank you. She is.
I'm just not bearing with the university. We have an opportunity to kind of frame it.
Yeah, you can't answer the question at this point in time.
Real quickly, how we kind of do this.
Well, we allow him to give his explanation first, and we ask questions of him. and then we will have him return to the back of the room, and then there are all five of you here with the school? Four? Okay. There are four people here in person.
One on the phone and four.
Okay. So you all will have the opportunity to adjust it also. Okay. So I'm just trying to understand. I mean, I read the stuff, but I'm trying to understand it from his point of view so that I can pose questions so we don't have to keep yo-yoing back and forth a ton. So I'm just trying to understand.
All right, very good. I apologize for interrupting. Okay.
What I'm saying is that that's what I asked. I was given feedback from the beginning that these are the expectations and what needs to be met. I would have welcomed that a long time ago, and that's what I asked. But to be given an F from 11-17, and still I was not told exactly what is exactly that you need me to do at this point in time. How many more procedures do I need to do? None of them.
Okay, so you have filled this and said how many you have to get done in this amount of time.
Let's say it was, if my recollection is correct, it was 30 for the whole year.
Okay, and how many have you done by November?
I have to look at it probably around the 10 number. Don't quote me on it.
So you had done about a third of them in half the time.
Specifically. But then there were a lot of other issues in there. A lot of other issues. Patients, you have an email in there. Patients that they were put on my schedule, that patients that didn't, weren't that kind of productive.
A patient isn't productive, what's that mean?
No. I mean patients that were put in that schedule by me not being aware of.
And wasn't your responsibility to look at the schedule and see what you were scheduled to do?
Correct. But these things were just placed in there. Today, it's a liquid concept. A patient gets in there, it can be dropped off. I don't have
much.
Okay.
When you're going to school, you're learning how to do the skill set, but they're also trying to give you the real world practice.
Okay.
And it is fluid. A patient has an appointment, they cancel. You still have to go to work and look at the schedule, and if you have to sit out to know it came, that's the case. If you see a cancellation and someone else, calls in an emergency and they fill that spot, you can't be off somewhere. You have to look. That happened to me last week. They had a cancellation. I got to go. I would have been very upset if it turned out the dentist went off somewhere. So that's real life. That you have to be an adult. This is an adult program. This isn't like it's a high school thing. And unfortunately, this happens a lot when students come in with complaints. That I understand a freshman in college may be a little bit confused about some of their obligations. But by the time you're at this level of education, and I understand that you're frustrated, that you went this far along, they were doing these IEPs with you, that from reading them, looks like they were trying to help you understand all of them. And we will ask them about if they did meet their obligation of meeting with you weekly, when they committed to that, and if that would have made a difference. But the bottom line is, it looks from all of this that you were given a lot of information, but a good part of it was to be you as an adult learner and planning for your future career to kind of step up and say, I have to do some of this myself. I mean, I went to college. I didn't get handheld. I was given a syllabus, and I had to get my work done. If I didn't get it done, I got a bad grade. And that's just how it works. I'm just confused about why your expectation was that they would have done that level of handholding, why you were surprised that you did poorly on some things when you didn't submit stuff or you didn't follow all the kind of common sense expectations. That's a problem that I'm having.
And my point is this. Based on their guidance on the syllabus, it says that the number of procedures for somebody to be deemed as failing or passing is until the end of that year.
Okay, so we will ask them about that, because no sense that continues to
be. And another, I can see it in this way. With the same productivity that I have, statistics can be reviewed. We can get the students in the same class and comparable numbers. How many of those people were given an F at the comprehensive care one? That's another question I raised. Can they answer that?
Or should they? I mean, it's
I don't know.
I have just a couple more questions I just want to kind of get clarity on. So you had expressed the fact that you had not heard about any professionalism, compliance concerns, or issues like that until much later in the process, if I understood you correctly.
The last professionalism form I was given, it was around February, somewhere in February 2016. And then the new professionalism forms I got, it was in December, two consecutive ones.
Okay. But it does talk through in both of your IEPs the fact that you should not receive any additional professionalism compliance forms in both of those.
Correct. And then my point is this, that if I was not found deficient for almost 2 years, a year and a half on the first one, on the July-December IEP, why would such an artificial condition be added up? So I can be found that I did something wrong when I got
one. That. I just wanted to clarify that up until that point, it was included on both IEPs, just for clarity, around the professionals and compliance.
But the same thing with the self-assessment. I was never told or found deficient on the self-assessment, but the condition was added in July, December 2017. So I'm very confused on what the purpose of the IEP is. Is something to be corrected when you do something wrong so you can improve and be helped going on forward? Or something that I think you might do wrong, and then you put a condition in there until you fail, or
so
whatever might be the circumstance.
And what date were you dismissed on?
February 12th,
2018. Okay. So July.
Correct.
To February.
Uh-huh.
Recognized in July, brought forward to you concerns around awareness, the self-assessment piece.
It was a condition being added in there, but I had done nothing that shows deficiency in the past for that to be added there.
So I'm just trying to appreciate the fact of 7 months where it was identified, brought forward as a concern, discussed during the IEP. I'm assuming socialized, you would have asked those questions at that time. And then, so I wouldn't say that it's the first you've heard of it. I mean, there was some duration of time that it was identified as a concern.
I'm talking principally about what the condition is. But we can go in details and see exactly what it was deemed.
I just wanted to clearly understand the timing piece of it, and you've helped me understand that. Right. The last question I have for you is, in regards to in your final IEP, you were expected to meet, as it ramped up, I guess, closer to your dismissal, how many times did you meet effectively with them? You shared 3 out of 11. I'm not sure if that includes that that period of time or not. I'm just trying to appreciate, did you meet with them from the second IEP on a regular basis? It looked like you had challenges in the first one.
Okay, April, June 2017, I was to meet based on the request, the criteria of that IEP, on a weekly basis. And my calculation was, out of the 11 weeks, we only met 3 times out. And then there is, I have submitted proof of what the reason was for not meeting. July through December 2017, the second IEP, I was given a progress report where new accusations surfaced on 11/7/17, and you have the proof of that.
But how many times did you meet with them?
I'm counting. After that, it was the certification meeting on 11/17/2017 between Dr. Walt and Dr. Cotton, when communication and productivity issues, new issues, came up. Then the next meeting that it was on 11/28 or 29 with Dr. Khan and Dr. Tommy. This was the evaluation from my supervisors for all these months. And the next meeting, it was on 12/20 with Dr. Cotton and Dr. Walt to give me the...
So your interpretation is IEP was issued in July. I'm assuming
the second one.
Yes, that's when you sat down to go through that. And you're saying your first meeting after receiving that IEP with the staff was
11:07
in November.
Correct. After that meeting, it was 11:07.
Okay.
And then, because the things didn't go right on that meeting, a clarification meeting, because I refused to sign those two forms that I deemed inappropriate to be signed. The attorneys communicated, my attorney, with school's attorney, and then a clarification meeting came because of that. It was not planned. That's my understanding of it. And from there, we can see my two new professionalism forms being given to me. And all type of situations, where a lot of things happened at that time. And the meeting after that was, if my recollection is correct again, it's 12-2017, where I was communicated the results of the IEP meeting for the July-December 2017.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I was trying to just understand. I appreciate that. I don't have any further questions.
Dr. Lack, do you have questions?
No, I think you covered it well.
All right, if you have a seat, we'll have to pull the number.
Thank you.
Carl, please come up.
They're actually there to do a period of what you should have
been. Yeah.
Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Dr. Janet Wolf. I'll go ahead and start. My name is Matt Heron. I'm on the phone. I'm representing Keystone University, Vice President and General Counsel. I'm based on the Kirksville campus. Today we brought an onslaught of people, and you'll see why here in a second, but we brought two faculty members, Dr. Cottom and Dr. Wolf. Those are two, you'll see, individuals that put a ton of time into trying to really see KL succeed. And then we brought Beth Popery and Kimberly Jones, really at the suggestion of Keith, just to give them an opportunity to see how these hearings work. So you guys know how it is in higher education. The more we can teach our people, the better. So those are the four people that we have involved. This situation is sad and it's hard. And I think, we are a very selective program, as though it is. And many, many thousand applicants for just 100 seats or so. And when we bring somebody in, we believe in them because there's 1,000 other people that could have taken that seat. And Kale was one of those people that we brought in because we thought had the right chops to do it. But in higher education, in order, especially in demanding programs like ours, if you don't have any self-awareness, you're not going to be willing to learn. And if you're not willing to learn, the clinical skills aren't going to develop. And unfortunately, that's what we have here. And it's hard for us because this is somebody that Dr. Wolf and Dr. Cottom have invested greatly in. I mean, spent a lot of hours trying to help Kale succeed. And in fact, we had attorneys talking. He had an attorney at some point that called, and we made a special arrangement for us to meet with the attorney to try to help get through to him what we were asking him to do, because we care. Since then, it's gotten harder because the onslaught has happened. It's the complaint that came in. It's got a very many true, very untrue allegations in our reputation, as well as demand letters and all the other stuff that goes along with it. The bottom line, this is about self-awareness, and if you look at the self-assessment, I mean, that tells the story right there. We had somebody that needed to improve, wasn't willing to listen. We invested a lot of resources to try to make him listen, and now we stand here today. So, I've provided Dr. Wolf, Dr. Cottom to answer any questions you have on our process. We have fought this with Mikhail along the way for a number of months now through attorneys, no attorneys, in every way you can think of. And we try to handle it with some grace and some respect, but in the end, I stand behind how we acted as a university and follow our policy.
Great, thank you. Who else is at the table?
So any questions you guys have for us or our faculty members, I'd be happy to answer anything you've got.
I'm Dr. Wayne Cottom, Vice Dean at the Arizona School of Dentistry and Law.
Dr. Janet Wolf, Associate Dean of Academic Assessment at
Arizona School of Dentistry know about.
So since the Tara made a statement for you, did you want to make separate statements or do you want us to just ask you questions?
No, I didn't make
the question. Sure, I'll start us off. Maybe if we could start with where we ended with Kale. Just trying to appreciate your perspective of after the July IEP was given, when that first kind of progress touch point meeting took place?
At the end of the July IEP?
No, it looked like the IEP was issued in July from the dates that it was put into place. KL has stated that the first meeting since that delivery of the IEP in July was November of that year, and I'm just trying to get clarity from the school if that's an accurate statement or not.
It may have been the first meeting officially either with the Academic Progress Committee or with us acting with the Academic Progress Committee. But the July IEP didn't actually mandate that there be regular meetings with that, but rather meeting with Dr. Kahn, which was his CCU director, as he determines to discuss an accession progress. And Dr. Kahn is in the clinic with him all the time. So. The clinic with the students all the time, and they can meet as often as they need. Just go up to the office, stay in the clinic, meet in the clinic.
So I appreciate that for that clarity. Did a meeting take place, or are you suggesting that progress was just dialogued normally within normal class time?
Yeah, I think that progress was dialogued normally within the class time, but then they keep the Academic Progress Committee updated on the students' progress, and at some point we either are satisfied with their progress or concerned with their progress and give the CCU director and the faculty enough time to say, yeah, I think this is a trend, or I don't think this is a trend. I think we need to do something more now, or we're more concerned, or we're less concerned. So from July throughout the fall, there was continual discussions among faculty, members of the APC, administration, and it developed until we had a couple of meetings towards the end of that semester when we saw the progress and the trends developing.
With the fact that this is a second IEP, so progression-wise, right? Is there any expectation that's set around documentation of meetings between the instructor and the student when they're demonstrating a progression of this nature? Would the instructor have documented those discussions?
Good.
Yes, so the CCU director, who was Dr. Kendall was switching at the time of KL, was working with Dr. Sonner and the other CCU director in that particular clinical unit and worked with him again on a daily basis and has a lot of communication, a lot of both email and written communications of what she was relating to him in those discussions.
So it looks like there was some email asking to sign notes. Another CCU director, that was in August 29th. Dr. Tomei, which is another CCU director, documented she had been working with him on comprehensive exams, believes there were communication issues. On September 18th, Dr. Kata, Murahari, Dr. Tomei, Dr. Kahn all met to discuss things with KL. That was on, and discuss concerns, and so there were discussions. Those discussions usually are, we'll meet to discuss the concerns we have based on our interaction with the students in the clinic. And so the interactions happen all the time with the faculty and the students in the clinic, and we come and we discuss, okay, are things getting better or are things not getting better?
So it seems with the information that was provided, there does seem to be a process in which things are denoted out and provided to the student, but there's this like huge gap between a February time span and then, to his point, the November time span, where it doesn't seem like there's any documentation that took place. And I'm just wondering if you provided that documentation and maybe I didn't see it, or if there is documentation that feedback was actually provided.
So you're talking February 17 to November 17, okay. Right?
Quick look, okay, sorry. Just kind of paging through. Bouncing one a little bit. So I have November of the 2015, and then December of 2015, sorry. And then we get to February 2016, where it just talks about, you know, kind of reminders to the student not complete and certain things. And then the next one after that is December 3rd, 2017. So it jumps from February all the way to December, and it seems like you have a process for documenting and denoting and providing feedback. I'm just not seeing anything between that time span, which is consistent with what the student is sharing of, I didn't feel like I received any type of feedback, documented feedback.
So the way the program is structured, it begins in July of the year, and the first year is basic science didactic courses. So they're not in clinic, they're not interacting with patients, they're only interacting with the faculty and the students. And the documentation that we have, that we provided to KL, in terms of his academic progress as well as his professional progress, began back in August of 2015 when he matriculated into the program. Early on, and we have the copies and communications and emails regarding his status, receiving a professionalism compliance form for not completing a survey that needed to be completed, walking through there, receiving a professionalism form for not showing up to an exam on time. So then as you move from the first year to the second year, where they're in preclinical courses, that's a different, little bit different set of faculty, and again, more clinical activity. But to your point, to realize that KL was not doing things poorly, that we had to have communication with him every month or even every couple of months. So there were periods where nothing happened, where he did not receive any professionalism forms. He was doing okay academically. So there were the peaks and valley, which account for when he's communicated with and when he isn't. So things did start to, you know, after the first couple of years, he was on probation, got off of probation, and then got back on probation. So there was a gap there because everything was okay until it wasn't, until he failed another course.
So it was, just put back on, there was a gap. Then he failed fixed prosthodontics, and then he was put on probation. And so that raised the concern for the first IEP, April to June 2017. And that period of time, maybe I can clarify, that period of time shows a gradual entry into the clinic. So it shows a gradual entry. So it goes from didactic to preclinical, which is pretty focused in the preclinical, and they gradually start getting into the clinic. Well, as they started gradually getting into the clinic, he failed the SIMMAN simulation, the communication issues started to come up about that time, when expressed concern about his self-assessment, expressed concern about his preclinical competency exam. So if you notice that April to June 2017 was a concern about, there was concerns about him being prepared and participating in all clinical activities, having a respectful attitude and demeanor, and not earning any more professionalism compliance forms. I don't remember if there was a professionalism compliance form that sparked that one beforehand, but there certainly were later on. And so, say that again. Oh yeah, the course failures is what started that. And so that IEP, as he went into the clinic and he started going to the clinic, as we got towards the end of that IEP, and he started interacting with patients and interacting with other faculty, the communication issues and the lack of self-assessment started to come up. And so we realized that that was an issue as well. So the IEP was in large part a response to the failure and not wanting him to accrue any more professionalism compliance forms and to help him. But as that IEP progressed, the communication issues began to come up, and we realized that we needed to help him even more as we moved along, trying to resolve those. So as we came to the end of that IEP, the next IEP was instituted.
Which just seems, I mean, recognizing the significance of this, right? A student's potentially going to get dismissed from school, right? They've invested a significant amount of time into their educational process. And then we get to July, and it sounds like the feedback mechanism was more just in class. And then we get to November, December timeframe when things really started to escalate at a much higher level.
Yeah. And there was more disrespectful communication. And then there's the communication issues. And then that's when the self-assessment issues really started to come up, okay, was towards the end of that semester. And that's when we start assessing the students on whether or not they can self-assess them. That's when everyone is sat down and is assessed. So we give them a self-assessment form. That's when when the different faculty members said he needs improvement or doesn't exceed expectations or doesn't meet expectations. Somewhere in that second semester, September, October, is when we start sitting down with the students and saying, okay, you've had a few months in clinic now. How are you self-assessing yourself? How do you think you're doing, and how does that compare with how we're doing? That's about the same time frame that we do that with just about every other student. And we realized that he just wasn't self-assessing himself and not taking the constructive criticism that the faculty were giving as compared to the rest of his class. And
is it typical with students after their second IEP, if they're not progressing through, they would be dismissed through class? Like if we were to look at other student dismissals, we would see a progression of one or two IEPs and then they're gone? Or would you consider this to be a unique situation where this was either really quick or actually really long?
We dismiss so few, it's hard to remember very many.
But when people are on IEPs, our expectation is that they will successfully complete it. And we very carefully review how someone has progressed in an individualized education plan and in pre-doctoral dental education. We have some students, depending on where they are on the progress and maturity continuum, we find that some students need more support and structure than do other students when they are flailing academically or professionally. So they are individualized education plans, so they're not going to look exactly the same, and you're not going to have you're not going to have necessarily the same outcomes. And so in looking at this particular case, coming to the conclusion of one IEP, we always look at, do we need to continue it? Do we need to revise it? Does the student need to withdraw or be dismissed? So considering those points very carefully. And in this case, revising the IEP, giving more detailed structure to help the student. Because like Dr. Cotton said, our goal isn't to dismiss people. We're trying to help them to succeed in this effort. So we try to give them as much information and support as possible.
So I guess to try to answer your question, to reemphasize what Dr. Wall said, it is an individual education plan, individualized education plan. And if I was to reflect back on this, I would say it might have taken a little bit longer, but that's usually because the other students who we placed on IEPs, to be quite frank, they usually improve. I mean, the IEPs usually go away.
And it's not unusual to have one IEP revised into a second IEP, revised even into a third IEP. So that is not uncommon when someone gets an IEP.
I can appreciate that, and it's helpful. Academically, it seemed as though the student had some bumps, but academically was passing. I know there was risk where he was asked currently, but he had not gotten to a point where he failed before he was dismissed academically. I'm just trying to understand that.
Right. So when we look at the academic progress of students, again, in professional, pre-doctoral, dental education, our caution probation policy caution alerts someone that they are in academic peril. So the first time somebody fails a course or has an unprofessional behavior issue, we try to be right there so that we can help get them on a corrective path so that they can either improve their academic progress or change their behavior to become more professional. So that starts right away, and our threshold for a GPA is 2.0. And so we try not to, I mean, we don't let people keep on in the program if they keep failing and failing and failing. I don't know.
Well, it's assuming that the student was, maybe when failing, was able to remediate to get to an acceptable level. So I guess with everything you're saying, this is where I'm having trouble connecting the dots. That with as much effort that was put into the student and trying to help them move forward and the development of the IEPs, that there weren't other indications between July and November that would have said, hey, probably right to do a touch base every 30 days, given the significance of this will result in a dismissal. And what I'm hearing from the school is that if that was done, it was done more in the natural progress of the class discussion with the instructor to the student versus anything more formalized until that November time frame.
I think that's probably right, probably because we had hopes the entire time that we were going to be seeing improvements, or that's how the improvements are made. The faculty works with the student on the clinic floor one-on-one, says, you know, this is going okay, this is not going okay, comes to us, given the benefit of the doubt. The faculty the benefit of the doubt as far as, yeah, let me work with them a little bit more. I think we might be making progress. Then we get an email where we're not making progress and it's disrespectful, and it's you know, they say dentistry is both an art and a science. Well, the professional education is both a little bit of art and a science, and herein lies maybe a little difference that I might point out with professional education, is that you're right, academically, you may be able to pass all the tests and pass all the objective tests, but there's something else that goes along in professional education, and that's professionalism, that's the communication, that's the accurate self-assessment. And those things are harder to objectively do on a objective scale. They're by their nature a little bit subjective, but we recognize that the first time we were able to give an assessment of his professionalism, clinical performance, those soft skills that you have to develop as a dentist, the first time we're able to actually give an assessment of pass-fail is the end of that first semester. Was the end of that first semester, we said, you didn't fail. Now, we're trying to communicate those things all along throughout the semester, but the first indication that any student has that they're not doing well in clinic, or the first grade or letter or thing that you, a subjective thing that you actually say at the end of the first semester, where you say, you know, you've made adequate progress, you haven't made adequate progress. You can cut the preps. You can learn to cut the preps in dentistry, but if you can't communicate with the patients and you can't self-assess, then you're still not able to complete the program.
Would you just provide clarity on the misses in the first IEP and the support for the student from the school's perspective? He took away that there were a number of times where the school was unable to meet with him.
You mean the meeting?
The meeting, yes.
Yeah. You know, I think it was Dr. Zuki.
Right. I think it said meeting.
And Ms. Hendricks.
Meeting weekly with Dr. Zuki and Ms. Hendricks.
Right.
And then regularly with Ms. Giles as she determines.
And it seems from the student's perspective that there were three meetings that took place and a number of meetings that did not end up taking place based on limitations of the school, not the limitations of the student.
Well,
and when you talk to Dr. Mizuki and Ms. Hendricks, that and Ms. Giles, that is something that we see differently, because we reached out, we tried, he rescheduled, and so there that happened multiple times, and so.
Yeah, I think to be quite honest, I'm good to be transparent, I think it's probably on both sides. I mean, you know, the fact that they're busy and if we want to meet on Friday, well, that Friday didn't happen, so maybe it's on Monday. I would push back that it didn't have anything to do with KL. To be quite frank, he could be quite a difficult person to schedule things with. Say that he would say that you know, this time doesn't work, or you know, we can't do it during this time, when we try to schedule in times that it would be convenient for him. Most students, when we ask for an appointment, they show up when we ask them to show up. And we try not to be onerous about it, but most of them will come in at 7:30 if that's what it is convenient for us to do, or what the best thing is to do. I don't think we have any documentation about how many exact times it was met. I would suspect that Kale doesn't have specific documentation. I would agree it was probably less than weekly, but I don't think it was for lack of trying. I don't think it was trying to blow things off. I think we both tried and schedules didn't coincide, so.
Dr. Lutz,
do
you have questions?
No, I don't necessarily have any questions. I think as I review this, the concerns I have surround the fact that this is a professional doctoral program with clinical components. And so when I look at the failures of the academics, and then seeing some of the other concerns that are related more to clinical and patient safety, especially becoming a dentist in the health field, those I would be a little bit concerned about, and understand that that IEP process was really designed to try and help get them on the right path. Because when you look at some of these, for example, not acceptably sealing a filling, or you know, scaling and root planning, all these things where they're, we are seeing clinical deficiencies to, you know, the school also has the responsibility to make sure that they're not graduating anyone also that has patient safety issues. So I just want to make sure that everyone understands this is a very different kind of program.
So my questions are, in all this reading, I saw that there was mentioned the difference between the book learning and the actual practical application. So is that where the problems really came, is that he maybe could do the book part and answer things, but the actual, you know, application interaction with the patients was the part that he was kind of lacking?
I think the communication, respectful communication with faculty, acceptance of criticism and assessment, and lack of accurate self-assessment.
Yeah, I saw that. There was a very wide spread between his evaluation of himself and his instructors, and that for the others, I assume those others in his class, that they were much tighter, that
right.
The students seemed to have a more realistic understanding.
Right.
So I don't know that much about your program, but I could follow that, which is good. But it looked like a lot of these things were just one after the other, and really November, December, and into February were very, very heavy, and they seemed like they were more around the patient interactions, you know, leaving mess when you went to lunch, misdiagnosing, not clearly explaining to someone to get permission to do something so the wrong thing got done. All those seemed like they were not necessarily the book learning part, but actually dealing with patients.
Yes.
So some of the things that he had complained about was that he had said that if he was on an IEP, if the IEP was extended, that he should not have been advanced to year three. So apparently he thought he should have been dismissed before he was allowed to go into year three. And in looking at the, trying to find it in the policy here, there's this, the policy name of Academic Caution and Probation, Policy 17. And I'm trying to understand, is an IEP only a function of probation, or can also just be a separate thing?
It can be
separate.
Yeah.
So to try to clarify this, this form says that if you're on probation, under guidelines on page 2, it says students currently on probation or who are put on probation may not be considered to be in good standing with the school or university and officially promote to the next year program. So I think this is what he's referencing. But at the point when he was allowed to go into year three, was he on probation or was he just on an IEP?
Yeah.
Oh, and is this correct? This is from says August 15th, so I'm trying to make sure I'm looking at the right thing.
August 15th. And we have revised that policy to not necessarily make it. Did you want to address that?
No. Do you
want
to see this?
No, I think I've got it. The policy 17 revised 8/15.
Yeah,
that one. Yeah.
We're just trying to figure out that the part, our role on this is whether the school follows their policies and procedures, so I'm just trying to figure out if you have.
Oh, no, yeah. So, guidelines. Student currently on probation, who are put on probation, may not. Now, so we use that word may not in order to be able, typically what we try to do is give the academic probation committee some leeway based on individual service. And so the way we have traditionally interpreted may, and I could show you that we put it in the other policies that we have too, the student may be dismissed. The student may have this happen, and the student may have this happen. It isn't a mandate. It isn't shall not. It isn't won't permit. we interpret that a little bit more to say that's something that may happen. And based on whether we feel they have promise, then we may be able to promote them to the next. We may be able to promote them to the next year. I'm sure. Help me, Ryan. I'm sure that we have promoted students from 1 year to the next while they're still on probation. For example, it used to be that our policy was that you couldn't. But if you couldn't, if you failed part one of the national boards, you were on probation. But they have until the second year to, to pass part one of the national boards. So we promote them to the second year, even though they're on probation, by virtue of the fact that they haven't passed part one. But, so in that situation, we would promote them.
From a policy standpoint, that does happen to be my area of expertise, not dentistry.
Yeah.
And we do often use May in policies to give leeway, but I can see on this one why he is confused, because the way this is worded, it says students currently on probation or who are put on probation may not officially promote for next year. That actually sounds like a done deal. It doesn't sound like, you know, it's your prior, whether you do or you don't. Just the way that it's worded, I think that you didn't accomplish what you were trying to do of making it be more arbitrary.
Probably.
So I would suggest that you, I would change this policy.
We did.
And May, you already did. You think you already did?
Yeah. We revised.
Because we had some committee changes.
Just for a point of clarification, your current catalog still has that same terminology in it. May.
May, yeah.
It's just like the May not.
It just says, yeah, may not. It just says may not, and then it says officially promote. So just may, so that you're clear.
I'm sorry, Kellogg says may not.
It says may not. It's exactly the same as.
Yeah, so as word is, so, on probation, may not officially promote. That really sounds like will not, shall not, it's not happening. And that's why it led to his confusion.
Yeah.
And so if that had been your intention, then it's a poorly worded policy. And if you had come to this, he still would have been dismissed. He just would have been dismissed sooner, right?
Yeah.
Because this sounds like you wouldn't have let him go to the third year.
Yeah.
Ms. Heron, did you want to say something?
No, I was saying, yeah, he would have been dismissed if they hadn't tried to work with him to give him an opportunity to move into the D3 clinic year, just by being on probation.
Yeah, so you just definitely want to look at this because as worded, I can see why he thinks it should have been kicked out earlier. But either way, his point of contention, his complaint, which we're sort of circling around trying to get to, is that what he's asking for is to make it look like, you know, kind of like the person got fired while I quit. That's actually what it sounds like, is that he got dismissed and he wants to say he left you. And you're not willing to do that. You want to leave it with, you know, where the terminology is from your school that says we kicked him out. That's apparently what his transcript says, and that's what he is taking umbrage with, is that he doesn't want it to say that he was dismissed. He wants it to be like he voluntarily left, and that seems to be his point of contention. That's the one thing he put in. All this is leading up to him saying he wants to say he quit rather than kicked him out. Is that what you mean?
I think the terminology was terminated.
Terminated
versus he was like
withdrawn.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's really his point of contention, is that if you were comfortable saying he withdrew, then that seems to be what he's asking for. And from your contention is we rightfully dismissed him, which from looking at the stuff you did, you know, all those things that were listed that happened in November, December, January seem very valid and why you wouldn't promote him further. But it seems like he's saying we should have kicked him out before he went into the third year. We didn't. We let him continue. And then he was dismissed, but he wants to pretend he quit instead.
I'm giving your acceptance process, being as rigid as it is, right? He may be interpreting that as with terminated on his transcript. Good luck getting into another school based on the fact that he was not meeting expectations at another school. So I think there may be something there for you to consider as well. From your experience, and kind of off topic a little bit, but
if your school was to receive transcripts from another institution with terminated on the transcript, would you accept those students into your program or would you not?
Let me answer that question.
This is Matt. We have before, actually.
Yeah. I would say it is not a given that a person would dismiss them on their transcript.
It's not a given. I would like to kind of echo what was said earlier, though, about the patient side of this. I mean, the dental school world isn't huge, which is one of KL's complaints, worries about reapplying. But we feel a duty to our to portray an accurate picture of our assessment of this individual, because it is the truth. It's exactly what happened, and we believe that we did handle it right. And it would be almost dishonest in our minds to go back and change it. And then we are confident that these same problems will run up again in another program because we gave it everything we could to try to fix it when he was with us.
Can I ask if his transcript records, whatever would normally be provided when another school asks for, the sealed transcript, leaving off whether he withdrew or was terminated, would the other things on the transcript speak to the issues that you were having with him? And are they reflected in the transcripts, irrespective of the reason that he was no longer there?
I think just the basic GPA and grades. So it
so
would
the
show
GPA was high.
It would show when GPA was high. I would say it was high.
She said it was
2.0 is the point at which if you're not maintaining a 2.0, then you're academically dismissed. Okay, so it would show several remediations. It would show the failures and the remediations. It would show the failure of the clinical semester. Withdraw from courses. It would have the basic data on how it wouldn't have any real narrative or anything like that, not any reasons.
But we can't ask you to change, just so you know. I was literally just exploring to understand the question because you filed your own policy and you're allowed to do that. And so we're looking for any place where you did file your policy. And if I'm reading this right, what I'm saying is that you probably should have, based on the misplacement of the word may, kicked him out sooner, which still would have been the same status, right? So I'm not finding that you shouldn't have dismissed him. His contention is that you can hold his hand a little more and make sure that he understands the expectations, but you had him on the IEP with the doctor, you could have a lot of, normal interaction. So I'm not finding that the school did anything wrong. The lesson learned for you is that just in your mind you see May, you think one thing. What's a good thing, too, is have somebody read it who doesn't write policy and ask them what they think it means, and mm-hmm. you might find something different. Like not even your like a lower-level person, have them read and say, what does this mean? You'll be surprised how people will interpret your things different than what you think.
Right.
But usually it's the other way. If the school kicks someone out, then they say, well, your policy makes it sound like that shouldn't have been a hard kick out. Yours is the reverse. It sounds like you should have kicked them out sooner.
I think we're trying. When I look at the following the procedures and the policies, as you even outlined in the IEP piece of it, that's where I'm a little struggling from the student perspective. And not that you call out me weekly or anything like that. There seem to be some disconnects in the earlier one where it was an expectation to meet weekly. And there sounds like there were some disconnects maybe on both sides, but regardless, seemed to be identified as an issue. We move into the second IEP, a continuation where we don't set any expectation on weekly meetings. But yet at the same time, recognizing there's concerns about professionalism, communication, all of that, but yet nothing documented from July until that November time frame, and then everything kind of really just ramps up there. That's where I'm still a little disconnected, and I realize from a procedural standpoint, I'm just speaking openly here, from a student perspective, if they're not recognizing the significance of it and nothing getting put down to the student to say, red flag, come August, red flag, come September, red flag, come October, nothing, maybe not. And that's what I'm trying to understand, how that student may then, with such a significant outcome, know they were at the edge of the cliff, if you will, versus good feedback in November, December. I know I've got some things to work on and will continue to work on those subjective pieces of how certain things are perceived.
Yeah.
This is Matt. That's a fair question. I think what's maybe we're not trained enough is how much effort we did put in. I mean, these interactions with faculty and updates and progress towards the IEP, these were daily interactions in the clinic. And what I think we're missing here is that every time he was approached about needing to open his eyes and learn, we were met with not only resistance, but refusal. And I think that's why we got to the end of this IEP and said, well, listen, I mean, there's no sense in moving forward with the IEP anymore because he's not hearing what we're saying. And he, in fact, not only didn't hear it, would argue the point with our educators on whether or not he was clinically competent in certain areas. And I think we got to a point where we realized it just wasn't going to change.
So let me try to address, and I appreciate what Matt said, let me try to address that movement from preclinical in the simulation clinic where the interaction with the faculty isn't every day and intense and consistent and sort of constant, to moving into the clinic where it's a daily sort of consistent, if the students are there, and if they're there participating, it's a daily constant feedback. And most students take that as the process and aggregate the comments they're getting from faculty and the emails and the discussions that aren't always documented all the time. Every single discussion isn't documented, although our faculty are documenting a little bit more now, and they did. But there are emails that came in, and they weren't provided to you, but that we have emails saying, you know, you need to improve on this, and you need to improve on that. And most students take that aggregate interaction, daily, consistent, always interaction with the faculty, and put together an idea of how they're doing. And it doesn't come as a surprise to them when we say, let's improve on this. Oh, okay, you've been kind of talking about me about that for a while, and that email that you gave, and the discussion with Dr. So-and-so brought that up, and they kind of put that whole thing together.
Is there a reason you didn't provide those email communications?
Matt responded on
that.
I provided. I can put those together. I think we do have them. Yes, that's why it was a big shock to us when, you know, to read allegations that this was just a bomb out of the water, out of the blue. You know, I mean, to us and to our faculty who were exasperated with trying to get him to listen to them, this shouldn't have been out of left field. From that perspective. So yes, we do have documents that I can put together to send to the committee.
If it would help, one of the more typical interactions, I can just quickly describe one of the typical interactions. There was a feedback from a faculty member on a form that said the procedure went well, continue working on patient communication and using a gentle approach. That was the feedback from the faculty. the response from KL was, the procedure and the communication with Lube was excellent, as with any other patient in the past. So can you please tell me what facts you have or that you witnessed during my communication with Ms. Lube that would require me to continue working on patient communication and using a gentle approach? Can you give me specifics, and not only for my patient, Ms. Lube, but for any other patient that you think could provide examples that are outside the norm of communication? Please provide the name, date, and details of the communication that took place between the patient and you and I. Otherwise, I would consider them inappropriate comments that constitute untrue allegations. I have received verbal accolades from better than 90% of my patients, sure, and request the feedback in writing from patients is how I treated them while in my care. Most students wouldn't respond like that. Most students would say, okay, how can I improve? Instead of saying that they're inappropriate comments. They're certainly not inappropriate comments. It's appropriate for a faculty to give whatever feedback that they feel is necessary. So there's once you get into that clinic, there's a daily constant feedback that goes on. And
out of curiosity, when was that dated?
That was in mid November.
Up until that point.
Madam Chair, if I can.
Sure.
Madam Chair, I have to actually leave, so I didn't want to have to do that if there was going to be a motion soon.
We still have quorum, so she needs to go. If there are any comments you would like to take into consideration, though, please let us know.
I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like the institution has demonstrated that the student was struggling academically. If they had a policy that said that the student, should have been dismissed, that would have been a worse advantage to the student than what they did in this particular case. It ended up in the same result. So the student wasn't harmed by getting an opportunity to demonstrate that they could progress in the program. So I personally do not see that there is any policy violation here for the school. I think a lot of interactions when you're trying to work with a student that they're talking about is happening before you start documenting, and I think that's typical in both student conduct as well as like HR, even it follows a very parallel line. So my personal stance is I don't see a policy violation.
Can I ask, just make sure I heard you right, you feel that they could have dismissed him earlier, they let him continue, and that was a reasonable thing to do, and the student wasn't harmed by giving him another chance to succeed? Is that what you said? I was trying to hear what you said. See, he was not harmed. Okay, perfect. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lutz.
Thank you.
Dr.
Luck
is departing the meeting, so it's on the
record. Right? Is it 370?
I have no further questions for the school.
Procedurally, do we need to allow a counter for the student?
No, the school
always has the final say. If you would like, you're allowed to, however, the school still has the final say. I agree with Dr. Luck that, first my original statement of that you could have divested yourself with him earlier, but you gave him an extra chance. Reading the things that happened in November and December and actually into February, my colleague, I'm a little surprised that it's sort of like radio sounds and all of a sudden there's all these things that, I would be concerned if that were my dentist. So I understand why they're concerned, but I was worried about being sort of like abrupt at that point and whether you get feedback, but I understand that if you're originally doing them maybe more verbally, so that's because of the permanent record, but you might want to consider at what point you coach people to make sure that it is permanent and in the permanent record. And you may have more emails that would justify it more. But it does seem to me that other than you have the opportunity to dismiss him sooner and you gave him another chance, I would want you to unilaterally never give anybody the extra chance because this maybe wasn't the right call on this one, this thing.
But it is hard to decide what, who deserves an extra chance and who doesn't, and that is somewhat subjective. But I have a feeling that if you had dismissed him, then you would have been called before us by him anyway before the other reason. So I think you should approve that call to make it that everyone thinks it means what you think it means. And I would like to make a motion to dismiss.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion second. Any other discussion? Roll call vote.
Michael Romano, aye.
Trish Slider, aye. Thank you for your explanation.
Madam Chair, can you reopen item two? Yes. You are able to approve that. You're in an impossible situation. So.
Well, she was here.
Yeah.
She was on the phone.
Oh, okay. So you're,
I think we forgot.
So I will make that motion to approve.
There wasn't even a person on the phone that counts.
Oh, yeah, it counts.
Yeah, that counts.
I just forgot.
Trish Slider, aye. And the vote?
Mike Romano, aye.
Trish Slider, aye.
Thank you so much.
Somebody's after guys. Good to be there. I don't know.
I didn't have my notes from the last meeting, so it was on the for me.
You weren't here.
That's right.
I called it.
That was a long time ago.
All right, next is a call to the public. Come on up. And presentation is limited to 5 minutes, and beware that we may not discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on any item not scheduled in the agenda during the meeting. Additional public comment may be requested, but it's generally not allowed.
All right, well, presentation I can speak for the site.
Okay.
I am very familiar with the website. And the only
thing for the record?
Leviticus Reed.
I'm sorry?
Leviticus Reed.
Leviticus Reed.
L-E-V-I-T-I-C-U-S R-W-E-D.
And what website?
The website here.
Oh, the board's website.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
And I guess the only issue that I have with the website is that it's very informative. I'm able to see the minutes. I'm able to see everything else. But as far as complaints are concerned, I'm just trying to understand what is the cutoff time. Because I see that the board meets like quarterly every 3 months or so. So then what would be the cutoff time for an application to be put in that it could be possibly like heard?
For a complaint? Or
correct.
For a complaint.
Yes.
Oh, for a complaint.
Yes.
So the board can't.
We don't have time frames for complaints. Basically, it's once you submit your complaint to Mr. Blanchard, our investigator, he will then review it to determine if it's under our jurisdiction. Then we'll send that complaint to the institution for a response. They're usually given, I don't know, 30 days maybe, a 30-day response time. Often they will ask for an extension. And then they'll send the response in, then Mr. Blanchard does his investigation, and then it gets scheduled for the next complaint, available complaint committee. So it could be, what?
Oh, yeah, I'm just trying to get this.
Like, say we get it from you, what's today, 5th? We get something from you the 5th? It would most likely go in March.
And if it takes time to, you know, go back and forth.
So basically, the safety mechanism would be 60 days before the next board.
At least.
At least, but if there is something egregious, that's a public safety issue that is an imminent threat, the board can always call a special meeting. So they do have that ability. However, a lot of these involve a lot of paperwork and investigation aren't really, they're just individual students.
And we're not getting caught off on a public safety issue of imminent danger right at this moment.
You know, if they're operating some kind of construction school where they're not making people wear helmets and people are losing limbs and stuff, we might
have that different.
But it's, and then the timeline to file complaints, because there is a statute of limitations. Yeah, so that's going to be in the Arizona Administrative Code for our chapters, Rule 403.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right, that was all I had. A little over 30 seconds.
Well, that was okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Reed.
All right, then we will adjourn at 3:25.